right, my friends. It's only Monday. We have a whole week to tackle this stuff. So thanks so much for joining me every single day as you do. We kick it off at high noon, noon to 2, Lunch with Gomez, right here on 103.9 LI News Radio. You can follow us on linewsradio.com. Just click on the Listen Live link. Also, if you care to share some comments or perhaps there's a story I missed, shoot it to me by email, Gomez, G-O-M-E-Z, at linewsradio.com. And you can always follow us on Twitter, at John Gomez Show. Joining me on the LI News Newsmaker line is COMAC attorney Fred Eisenbud. He's also the former leader of the first Suffolk County Environmental Crime Bureau, former prosecutor. Welcome aboard, Fred. How are you?
Very well. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us. Fred, I'd say last year, let me think about this. I'm trying to figure out exactly when this thing broke. Well, it was sometime last year, probably in the spring, toxic dumping over at the Roberto Clemente Park, and it just opened up a whole, like, two or three other investigations. One was actually in underneath the ground of some brand new homes that were built for veterans that returned from war. I mean, it just got uglier and uglier and uglier. And I think the average person sitting back reading these stories, headline news, and the more they found out about it, the more disgusting it was. And you know, I'm thinking to myself, and I think many people are, all right, whoever did this, you know, just how much are they going to have to pay? What's the crime here? How are they going to be able to prosecute this crime and so forth? And what's interesting is I began to see little things about, you know, record keeping and, you know, all of a sudden it goes off on tangents, you know, like the prosecutors trying to prosecute them on other issues, not necessarily the dangers of the environmental damage that they did or the so-called environmental crime that they committed. And I'm thinking to myself, hey, wait a minute. How about the crime? You know, and they get them on something else. And there's an extensive article in Newsday over the weekend talked about, you know, and they had a lot of attorneys, especially you, ran the crime bureau, environmental crime bureau for Suffolk County, saying that, listen, it's very, very difficult to prosecute any of these crimes. But you had a successful record in doing so, right, Fred?
I did, but I think part of that has to do with my approach to selecting cases. I think it's very important to keep in mind, just because something happened that has horrific consequences doesn't mean you can prosecute an environmental crime. You have to prove that it occurred with criminal intent. And I think, and I'm not representing anyone in the case, and I don't really know the facts beyond what's been reported in Newsday, but it appears that most of the people who have been indicted are people who are trucking dirt from New York City out to Long Island. And what they're going to have to prove, and I don't know if they have proof of this or not, is whether when you go to a site where there's construction and people are digging things up and putting them into trucks to take away, whether the driver and the company who hired the driver knew that they were taking contaminated material.
So one question is, when they pick up the contaminated material, wherever it was, somewhere in the city, wherever it was, A, whether or not they have the knowledge that, oh, they're dumping this, you know, toxic material in the truck that I'm driving, then they proceed to drive it to an area that's not a licensed area to dump this stuff.
And sure, if they can show that they had knowledge that they were picking up contaminated material, then the case is really not difficult to prove. The problem is proving that they knew when the material was put in the truck that it was anything other than clean fill.
Now, Fred, how about the masterminds behind it? How about the people, you know, who figured, and I'm not in the business, you know, so I've spoken to a lot of people I know who are in the business. It costs a lot. This was 50,000 tons of material. Not all of it was toxic, apparently, but it's 50,000 tons of rebar, of cement blocks, of glass. And I guess at one point when they were passing a big sign that said Roberto Clemente Town Park, they must be thinking, you know what? I don't know if this is a place I'd be dumping this stuff.
Yeah, assuming that they knew that it was inappropriate, then.
And I'm not so concerned about the drivers myself. I'm more concerned about the masterminds, the people who were getting paid X amount of money, and apparently from conversations I've had, to dump this kind of material, 50,000 tons of it, is, I mean, would it be hundreds of thousands of dollars to do it the legal way, the proper way?
It can be very expensive, to get rid of it properly, absolutely.
Yeah.
But the question still remains, did the person who was hiring the truck drivers to pick this material up know that it was contaminated? Let me just give you a different perspective.
Please do.
Here's the thing. I was a prosecutor for a long time before I started doing environmental prosecutions. Typically, penal law is straightforward. Someone either violates the law or they don't, and it's an easy choice. You either prosecute them because you can prove the case or you can't. Environmental prosecutions are part of an overall framework, which is really very different. You've got three components. You've got the possibility of an administrative violation. The Department of Environmental Conservation, the EPA, the local health departments all have jurisdiction to go after people administratively, and that's a strict liability offense. If they violate the regulations, it doesn't matter if they had criminal intent. They can go after them without worrying about having to prove that they knew what they were doing. If they brought contaminated waste to an area and there was no authorization to do that, they're going to lose in an administrative proceeding and they can be compelled to clean up. Civilly, the Attorney General has the power to go after people to compel them to do a cleanup and to fine them substantial amounts of money. And the DEC can do that as well in an administrative proceeding. Criminal law requires that there be criminal intent. And the question is it appropriate to proceed criminally, and does it make sense given the limited resources of prosecutors where you can go after them administratively? You said, indicated yourself correctly, that it's going to cost a lot of money to clean this up. And my experience is that when people are compelled to spend a whole lot more money than they made by dumping to clean up, that's a pretty good deterrent. You don't need to put them in jail. They're going to be deterred by having to spend all that money, or they'll be bankrupted.
Well, Fred, that raises one of the points I wanted to discuss is, you know, it said the article says it could cost up to or perhaps more of $16.5 million to clean this up. And I'm thinking to myself, if the penalty isn't even near that, I mean, how does the community, how does society recoup that cost?
Yeah, if I'm not mistaken, the $16 million was a reference to a gigantic case in Queens County years ago as to what the cost was. I don't know
that the costs
here are going to be anything like that. But obviously that is a concern, that people won't have the money to do the cleanup. And if you can prove that there was criminal intent, by all means, go after them. The way I approach cases, if you don't mind my just doing a little bit of history, I had a very clear-cut line between administrative and criminal. And I worked very closely with the sanitarians from the health department in Suffolk County who were superb. They had enough people at that time, and it's been cut way back since, to investigate every generator of hazardous waste in the county once a year. It was terrific. So they knew who was creating problems. And it was very clear. I said to them, if you get somebody for the first time, unless it's so egregious that there's no question they knew what they were doing was wrong, treat it administratively. Get a consent order, which is basically a contract where they promise not to do it again. Pay a fine and do a cleanup. And then if you catch them doing the same thing again, then there's no problem proving criminal intent. Give me the case.
Right.
And generally, that's the way we proceeded. There were a few examples that were just so horrible that there was no issue. There was a furniture stripper out in Sag Harbor who had vats of solvents, and he decided they were dirty, so he put a hose in the tank and started a siphon, put it out the window, and left the night. There was no question he knew what he was doing was wrong, and he went to jail. But most of the time, the cases that I had were involved people who had been caught before and did it again. So there was no issue relating to criminal intent. I didn't have to worry about that in most of my cases.
I mean, one could certainly argue that keeping them out of jail is so they're able to at least pay back the fine or pay back some of the money back to, you know, the society or the community to fend off, you know, that huge hit that the community is going to get as far as cleaning it up. That's one good argument. And then if God forbid they end up doing an environmental crime again, then you've got them.
Absolutely. And believe me, I don't want to sound as though I think it's inappropriate to have environmental crimes. It's certainly appropriate in the right situation. But if you handle cases administratively, you're immediately discussing with the wrongdoer what they're going to do to fix the problem. When you charge somebody criminally, you know, they're lawyered up, they're not going to talk to you, and they're not going to cooperate at all in terms of cleaning up.
Well, how about, Fred, as far as, you know, there was this part of the article that was interesting, and I think you're addressing it here, is instead of going after the crime itself, you're going after the administrative process so that it's going to be easier. It's ironic. Those criminals who keep cleaner records as to what they're doing are more susceptible to being brought up on charges than those who just did it by word of mouth and cash, I guess, right?
Well, certainly that can be the situation. But frequently, you know, the district attorney or the police department, someone will get notice that something is going on a repeated basis, and they'll do surveillance. They'll have video pictures. They'll have pictures of the trucks that are going in and out, and they'll know exactly who's doing it. It'd be nice to have the specific records, but they can prove their cases.
Hey, you know, Fred, how about for people who are in the town's business, let's say they're town employees, and they essentially, and just hypothetically here, they turned a blind eye, because it just so happens in this case at Roberto Clemente, they did have some video footage, but sadly, some of the video footage or the video footage was deleted after a certain amount of time, so they couldn't go back in time to see it. But there are records of people coming to town board hearings, notifying, you know, political leaders that something wrong is going on. I mean, at what point do political leaders or do people, not even political leaders, but those like commissioners, have a duty to do something? And once that line is crossed, as far as having a duty to do something, and you were informed or notified of an illegal behavior going on, How much culpability do they have, or how much liability, rather, do they have?
Well, I'm not sure I want to be too specific here. Obviously, if there was an agreement between them and the wrongdoer to allow it to happen and turn a blind eye, that would be conspiracy, and you'd be able to prosecute that.
Right.
They'd be aiding and abetting it. If they just were indifferent to it, you know what? It becomes more of a political question. Throw the rascals out. The next election.
It's just a shame because I see, you know, when I went to law school, environmental law wasn't one of the fields that popped out at me.
there were no courses offered when I went to law school.
Yeah, well, they were there. I mean, and you had plenty of people. There was an environmental law journal too, actually, at the school I went to. But it just didn't appeal to me. But you know, as I get older, you know, you see the impact it has on society and the crimes that are out there that could be committed. And I never really thought much of. You know, you're dumping, you know, every once in a while you used to see tires or mattresses dumped at the side of the road. I mean, that's a crime. That's horrible. But when you then all of a sudden, if you tack on all the asbestos, all the buildings that were built in that period of time when asbestos was being used, and if they're coming down and then you have to get rid of that stuff legally, it must cost a fortune, absolute fortune.
Yes, it does.
And then I can see how a company who's hired to do this at a specific number, because often these jobs are put out by bid, and the low bid person, you know, usually gets the job. And that low bid person's probably thinking that perhaps maybe 10%, 20%, 25% of the work of the debris I remediate, I might have to go do something, you know, that's improper, you know, so that I can make my, you know, small profit there.
In a case like you're talking about, where they're licensed to do work with asbestos, so they know exactly what they're handling, and they illegally dump it, I've got no problem with going after them criminally. They ought to be put in jail. They
absolutely
know exactly what they're doing.
Now, the article seemed to suggest that it's lightened up since the time you started. You know, apparently you were one of the leaders at the forefront of this in Suffolk County. Has the DA's office, has prosecution been, you know, it's so costly to do it. Again, the article suggests that, we just don't dedicate that much money into it anymore.
Well, they have attorneys that are assigned within the Economic Crime Bureau, and they have investigators who can do the investigations. My sense, frankly, is that things are probably a lot better today than they were in the 80s. In the 80s, no one was doing any enforcement. No one ever went to jail. And so it was the Wild West. People were just dumping all over the place, and they didn't care about it. And if they got caught by the health department, the fines were $250 a day, and it was just the cost of doing business. So the first time we put somebody in jail, that carried a really loud message, because you can't pass a jail cell on as a cost of doing business, and people took it more seriously. And I think as a result, the health department and the DEC were able to do their jobs a lot better, and people listened. And I think the wholesale dumping doesn't occur nearly as frequently as it used to.
Is there civil action as well as criminal action? Or, for example, if you have, if I have a neighbor who just all of a sudden I see a hose that's he's dumping stuff onto my onto my property, you know, or let's say the commercial is probably a better example. And God forbid I'm next to a dry cleaner and I see a hose going from his property to my property. Holy mackerel. That could
That could be a major problem.
Now, is that strictly criminal or is there also civil?
No, there's civil remedies that you have that you can go after them. If it's petroleum, there's strict liability for discharging petroleum, and you can recover attorney's fees and expert fees.
You know, folks, if you're just joining us, Fred Eisenbud is with us. He's an attorney, environmental expert. His office is up in Comac. Featured in an
you know attorneys can't use the word expert.
Is that right? I didn't know that.
Because we're not licensed.
Oh,
we're
okay.
We're not licensed in areas, so we're not allowed to say we're experts.
Okay, I strike that from the record, please, Your Honor. But anyway, you know, there's another bit that the article addressed, and that's bringing a case, you know, and it lends perhaps some credence to the argument of professional jurors. I remember when I was in school, that was one of the big ones. In fact, one of my close friends, she wrote a paper on promoting a professional jury. And in this case, when you have an environmental infraction or environmental crime, And you just have an average jury up there of one's peers, you know, they're going to fall asleep when you start talking about you know, different complexities of the environment, you know, tons, toxic waste and so forth. It's a lot easier to get them on the administrative crime rather than the environmental crime because they're just not going to understand it. Therefore, they're not going to feel, they'll feel a little more hesitant to, you know, to find them guilty because they just don't understand the crime.
I think that that's just a matter of taking the time to prove your case properly. But again, if you're selective, in my cases where I had people who were caught before, put in writing promising not to do it again, and then they did it again, jurors have no difficulty understanding that.
God, Fred, it boggles the mind how people just keep on going back. And you know, they just don't learn the lesson. I guess some people just don't get it. I don't know. Maybe they think they're smarter now and they can, you know, they'll be able to hide the crime better than they did the first time.
Well, I don't know how often that happens when they get caught and they're forced to do the cleanup, because that they wind up spending a lot more money than they made in the process. So the cost of cleanup is a pretty good deterrent. So I think administrative enforcement is extremely valuable. You don't have to prove criminal intent.
You know, I have often said, Fred, when, you know, talking about criminals and so forth, I would always say, geez, if these people spent half the amount of time, you know, learning a legal trade as they do trying to commit the crime that they do and getting involved in the life of crime that they get into, they'd probably be very successful. but instead, something in their mind, I don't know, they decide to commit criminal acts, and I guess their conscience isn't that great, so I don't know.
Well, I don't think sociopaths are limited to environmental crimes.
Well, Fred, it was a pleasure having you on board. Thanks so much for joining us. I appreciate it, and as this case develops, I'm sure something's going to happen soon. I'd like to get you back if something pops.
No problem. Thank you very much.
All right, take care. Fred Eisenberg, ladies and gentlemen, over in Comac. If you got an environmental issue, I'd give him a call. Sounds like a good guy. Great background. Anyway, folks, coming up after the break, we have Zach Fink of New York One talking about what's going on in Albany. And that is more to come on The John Gomez Show.